So this is unofficial Mahabharat night. And carrying on, we'll be discussing Bhagavatam. But, well, there's a little bit of Bhagavatam here also. Glories of Bhishma Deva. A pure devotee of Lord Krishna. There's a lot of understanding about Bhishma Deva from Mahabharat. There's mixed a little bit of some understandings we have from Srimad Bhagavatam also. What we know about Grandfather Bhishma. But one of the things we know from Yamaraj is that Bhishma Dev is one of the 12 Mahajans. Those of you that know the verse or can read it, we'll say it together. Svayambhur Narada Shambho Kumara Kapilo Manho Palado Janako Bhishmo Baliyat Vayasakhi Vayam. So Vayam, that's Yamaraj. Canto 6, Chapter 3, Yamaraj is speaking to the Yamadutas just after the little event with Ajamila, and the Yamadutas were taking the sinful Ajamila to the court of Yamaraj, and the Vishnu Dutas intervened and stopped them. And the Vishnu Dutas demanded, if you're representatives of Yamaraj, then you're supposed to know what is Dharma, because he's Dharmaraj. So you please explain the codes of Dharma, whereby someone is punished and someone is not. And they gave their codes, but it sounded very reasonable, but it was missing the transcendental or paradharma feature of the chanting of the holy name counteracts all sins. So they sent them away, you go back to your teacher and get some instruction because you didn't do your homework right. You got an F on your surprise quiz. So when the chapter 3 is the Yamadutas go back and they present the situation, what just happened to them, to Yamaraj, and they want to know what happened. Who were those people and why were we stopped? And we thought, you're the supreme. Whoever stops death. But we were stopped. Death was stopped by whoever those people were. Who were they? And does that mean that there's two gods? There's you and then another god? And that could be a problem. Because sometimes there may not be agreement between two gods. So, if you think that we're capable of understanding you, please explain. So one of the verses in Yamaraj's explanation is this one. He gives these 12 Mahajans, and these 12 Mahajans are great authorities. They understand Dharma in its fullness. Mahajano Yeda Katha Sapanta. Those of you that have heard Srila Prabhupada speaking, you know that phrase. It's from Mahabharata. And it's spoken by Yudhisthira to the Yaksha when the Yaksha comes out of the lake and the Yaksha is asking different questions. And one of those questions is, sometimes there are contradictory codes of Dharma to follow, and how are you supposed to sort out which one to follow and which one to neglect when they're in contradiction? And Yamaraj gives a really good answer. He says, you're right, it's sometimes very difficult. and therefore one must follow the path of Mahajans. Mahajano yena kata sapanta. The conclusion is properly understood through the Mahajans, and Bhishma Dev is one of those great authorities. Here's the list of the names. And I myself know the real religious principle. So that's one understanding. He was one of the great Mahajans of all times. We often hear that Bhishma Dev was a Vasu. There's not a lot written about what the Vasus are. But we know, we often hear reference to the Ashta Vasus. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's reference again in Canto 6, Chapter 3. Excuse me, it's Canto 9, Chapter 3. Of the 10 daughters of Daksha, given to Yamaraj, one was named Vasu. Now, Canto 6, but not Chapter 3. In any case, Daksha had 10,000 sons, then 1,000 sons, and then some daughters. The 10,000 and 1,000 sons became followers of Narada, and then some daughters. And of the daughters, different daughters were given to different sages for different purposes, for purposes of propagating good praja by prajapatis, the daughters of Daksha and the prajapatis. So 10 of those daughters were given in marriage to Daksha, to Yamaraj. One of those daughters was named Vasu, and the sons of Vasu were known as the 8 Vasus. Just hear their names from me: Drona, Prana, Dhruva, not Dhruva Maharaj, different, Arka, Agni, Dosha, Vastu, and Viva, Vasu. Not a lot is spoken about them, but you know what prana is. These are, they're in the categories of demigods, not just prajapatis and sons of, sons of the daughter Vasu. For example, a partial expansion of Drona entered into the body of Nanda Maharaj and enjoyed Krishna's childhood pastimes with him. And when the time of Narada's returning, Krishna, there's a detailed description given by Jiva Goswami where Krishna actually returns to Vrindavan. Did you know that? Krishna returned to Vrindavan after he killed Dantavakra. He killed Shishupal, and then he killed Dantavakra, as the final giant Vijay pair. According to Jiva Goswami, it was just outside the gate of Mathura. And in the present day, there's a village bearing his name, Dantavakra's name. So the explanation given is Krishna was so close to Vrindavan, he changed his royal attire into Braja attire and entered Braja and gave his association to the Brijvasis. And part of the plan was those who were devas who had taken birth on earth to assist him in his pastimes, some of whom were partial expansions of devas, they were to be sent back to their Deva kingdom. You can research on your own. It's kind of obscure, but it's there. Drona and Dara. familiar with those names? Some of you? Drona and Tara. They were partial expansions of these two, and so Drona, a partial expansion of him, was part of Krishna's childhood pastimes and then returned to his position as one of the Vasus. Interesting. Madhvacharya gives a somewhat different explanation, and the somewhat different explanation can be because there's different yuga cycles and there are different Vasus by different names. So he indicates the 33 million demigods have basically three categories. There's the sons of Aditi. There are not too many. And the Adityas, the Vasus and the Rudras. And his explanation of the Vasus goes like this. Agni, Prithvi, that's female, goddess of the earth, Vayu, god of the wind, Antariksha, the god of space, Aditya, the sun god, Chandra Rama, Chandrama, moon god, and the Nakshatra, god of the 27 nakshatras. Anybody here is into astrology a little bit and familiar with what the nakshatras are? Anybody here? Is this a nakshatra conference going on? No, something else. Keys to your car. Okay. Okay. I don't know much. I've heard certainly the term. My understanding is it goes like this. There are 12 primary constellations, the zodiac, and one takes birth according to some position in the zodiac. We have the ruling, you know, constellation. And then there's a certain number of, there's 28 days, or, you know, 14 days of the waxing, 14 days of the waning moon, like that. And there's a nakshatra for each one of those days. It's a, the English word is an asterism. It's a smaller collection of stars that rules over that day. Those are nakshatras or asterisms. And these are, according to Madhvacharya, Vasus. And there's a god of those nakshatras, and his name is Nakshatra. And then there's Dyo. We're going to hear some more about Dyo, so he's been given some different color. And that Dyo became Bhishma Dev. Vasu, Dyo became Bhishma Dev for some period of time and then went back to his position as Vasu. According to Mahabharata, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, he went back to Godhead. Bhishma Dev is spoken of indirectly in Vishnu Sahasranama. Many of you are familiar with that. Maybe some of you have a practice of chanting that, or know persons that have regular practice of chanting the thousand names of Vishnu. One of those thousand names of Vishnu is Vasumana. Bhishma, Baladev Vidyabhusan, one of our acharyas, he gave a commentary on the 1,000 names of Vishnu. And his commentary on this Vasumana goes like this. One day, when Yudhisthira Maharaj went to see Krishna, because Krishna was visiting for some time while he was ruling in Hastinapur, when he went to offer his obeisances and greet Krishna in the morning, Krishna was engaged in meditation. So he didn't want to disrupt his meditation, so he patiently waited and waited, and it was a long meditation. And finally, after some time, Krishna completed his meditation, and then Yudhisthira came before him, offered his obeisances, and then requested, may I ask, upon whom were you meditating? And Krishna's answer was Grandfather Bhishma. He was very satisfied with Grandfather Bhishma, so he always remembered him. Vasumana, Krishna's reply, greatly afflicted and lying on the bed of arrows, Bhishma Dev remembered me at the last stage of his life because of his remembrance of me. O best of men, I now always remember him. And thus the name Vasumana. Now, those of you that are fond of Mahabharata, you know how complicated it gets sometimes. So I'm going to be narrating three threads of stories, and they're really complicated, so you have to pay attention or just enjoy so many names. And my goodness, how complicated it is. So there was a king, Maha Abhishek, who was very powerful, great warrior, and very exalted king, and so elevated that he attained, this is Mahabharata narration, he attained the heavenly kingdom. And one time, while he was residing in the heavenly kingdom, there was a big festival, and the demigods were invited to attend, and it was held at Brahmaloka. So he got a special vimana and went to Brahmaloka and was enjoying the festival at Brahmaloka. And at the same time, from the heavenly realm, Mother Ganga was also there, and a breeze was blowing in such a manner that parts of her body were being exposed by the wind, and Maha Abhishek was attacked with lust, seeing the bodily features of Ganga, and Ganga, like women, somehow have the ability to know when men are looking at them. She understood that this personality is looking at me, and she became attracted by his attraction. And Brahma noticed the whole thing. And Brahma immediately confronted them both and said, you have no business being in heavenly planets. I curse you that you should descend to the earth planet for some time. And Ganga appealed, please give me some relief. And he then made a pronouncement. Very well, you will give birth to 8 sons, and when those 8 sons are relieved of their life, you'll then return to your position in the heavenly realm. And so Ganga descended. Now, the river Ganga, but Ganga personified, according to the Mahabharata narration, she descended and traveled here and there by the sides of the bank of the river Ganga. And King Maha Abhishek, who is now residing in the heavenly planet, he descended and became Santanu, and they associated in the earthly plane, whereas before they were in the demigod plane of existence. according to Mahabharata and according to Srimad Bhagavatam, the father of Santanu, his name was Pratipa, and he was in the line of kings from the lunar dynasty. This is in the ninth canto. And he had three sons, and one of those three sons was named Santanu. Now we're going to come back to this narration. Santanu later meets Ganga, but in the combination of Santanu and Ganga, there's a son. So now we're going to pause on the narration of Santanu and Ganga and go to another narration and come back to this one. So the other narration has to do with the eight Vasus, one of the eight Vasus being Dyo, and the eight Vasus were touring these. No, so they're demigods and they're touring higher regions wherever they wanted to go, and they have some notoriety of being great kshatriya, hero, fighters, warriors. They would protect the demigods, but they were, you know, they would engage in their heroism in different ways. So one time they were touring and they came to the hermitage of the sage Vasishta, and the wife of Dyo became very attracted to the Kamadhenu of Vasishta, and she appealed to her husband, "Let's take this Kamadhenu back to our palace, it'll be very nice." And he was attached, unfortunately, to his good wife, so much so he lost his finer discretion, and they together, the eight brothers, tried to take the Kamadhenu of Vasishta. That was a big mistake. So Vasishta could have done practically anything, but he cursed them, "You should leave the heavenly region and descend to earth." And the seven brothers, they appealed, "Oh, we were just here to help our brother, so please be lenient upon us seven." So Vasishta agreed, "You seven will take birth on earth. Shortly after your birth on earth, you will die, and then you'll come back to your position here as Vasus. But that one, Dyo, he will have to remain on earth for a long time." So now we'll go back to the other narration. There's Santanu and Ganga, and one time when Santanu was traveling in the forest practicing his hunting skills and so forth, he saw this very beautiful damsel. And it was Ganga. Now previously, Ganga had come to earth and she saw the father of Santanu. What was the father of Santanu's name? Pratipa, right? Pratipa. So she, Ganga, approached Pratipa. He was in the forest, seated, and she kind of really directly came and sat on his right thigh and said, "Let's get married. I'm very attracted to you." And he said, "It's part of our culture, if a woman is resting on the right thigh of a man, that's an indication that she will become married to his son." So in time, I will have a son, and you can be married to him. So there's the son, Santanu, son of King Pratipa in the lunar dynasty. And Ganga was attracted, and he was attracted to her. And he didn't waste any time. He made a marriage proposal. And she agreed on a certain condition. It's a condition any married woman would want. Her condition was, you never object to anything I say or do. And if you agree to that, we can get married. He said, no problem. Let's get married. So they got married. And one by one, the seven sons born of Ganga, shortly after their birth, were taken by Ganga and thrown into the Ganga. But he gave his word. He'll never say anything objecting to what she says or does. And so those seven sons were the seven brothers of Dyo that died shortly after their birth and then returned to their position as Vasus. But the other Vasu, child number eight, Santanu broke the silence when she was getting ready to drown child number eight. And she said, okay, that's it. You broke your vow. See you later. So she didn't drown that child. Deva Vrata was his name. But she just disappeared into the forest. And there in the forest, she had the small boy, as he grew up, trained both by Vashishta in spiritual knowledge. This is how Bhishma Dev became accomplished as a knower of Dharma, by being trained by Vashishta. And in military skill, he was trained by Parashurama. And as we know, Parashurama is well known for his skill in military ability. Later, this relationship with Bhishma Dev and his guru Parashurama becomes a very important part of the Mahabharata drama. We'll narrate that later. But he is his, like Drona was for the Pandavas, Parashurama was for Grandfather Bhishma. He was his military guru. And this went on for a number of years. In fact, according to Mahabharata, for 32 years. And then one day when, again, Santanu was by the side of the river Ganga, there's Ganga personified, and she brings before him Devavrata. So that this is your son. I'm returning him to you. You take care of him. And Ganga returned to the heavenly realm. So there's Devavrata, who is one of the Vasus, who has been cursed to stay for some time on earth. Now we're going to go back to Santanu meeting Satyavati. So, Devavrata was the firstborn son of the king. And after some time, Santanu, wanting to cross the river, found a boat, and carrying the boat lady was Satyavati. Now, we're going to give another little narration that's even more complicated. Who is Satyavati? According to Srimad Bhagavatam, Satyavati prior to being the daughter of the fisherman, Satyavati was the daughter of a king, Upaichara, and Matsya Garbha. So here's what the Bhagavatam says. This is now 9th canto, chapter 22. This is in the lineages of kings leading up to the 10th canto, and Krishna makes his appearance at the beginning of the 10th canto. It's that section of the Bhagavatam. It's from the purport. Satyavati was actually the daughter of Upadichara Vasu by the womb of a fisherwoman known as Matsya Garbha. Later, Satyavati was raised by a fisherman. So, Prabhupada writes, it's his purport, and he doesn't give the Mahabharata narration. But the Mahabharata narration goes like this. This is narration number 3 within this evening's Mahabharata stories. So, Upadichara Vasu, he wasn't one of the 8 Vasus, but he was known as a Vasu. In part, he had like that as a title because he was a very powerful king. Very, very, very powerful king. And on the earthly plane, in the line of the Kuru dynasty. So he, Upadichara, had a friendship, he was a worshipper of Indra, and they had a friendship. So by the benediction of Indra and the instruction of Indra, he conquered the kingdom of Chedi. So he became the ruler of Chedi. If you remember, Shishupal is in that dynasty, the Chedi dynasty. So we'll hear shortly how they're connected. So he ruled there for some time, and periodically he would make visits to the heavenly kingdom. He was very exalted, very qualified. Indra would give him transport to the heavenly kingdom, and they would travel here and there. In fact, that's his name indicates that activity with Indra, Upadichara. He would go here and there with Indra. And after some time enjoying those material enjoyments, he decided to take a turn in his life, and he wanted to become deeply involved in sense control and elevation of higher consciousness. So he went into the forest. He gave up the military capacity that he had and engaged in very, very intense austerities. And Indra was concerned. He's a very powerful person. If he becomes so qualified, maybe he'll take over my position in King of Heaven. So he, with a little entourage, came with gifts for Upadichara and appealed to him, give up these austerities and resume your activities as king. So he agreed. And he was a very powerful king. Just before coming here to Detroit, I was in Naperville. And we're discussing in the Bhagavatam class in Naperville that chapter 3, which could be canto 3, description of Brahma's appearance. And he appeared from the nostril of Brahma, and then he became really big, like a mountain, and he roared like a mountain. And Prabhupada explains that mountains would sometimes roar. And somebody was saying, you know, it's a challenge to my faith to hear that mountains roar. or that mountains are living entities. Now, it's not that all mountains are living entities, because just like bodies, when the soul leaves the body, it's just a body. Bones and the flesh rots, but the bones remain. There's no life left in the bones. So similarly, there's mountains, that there's a living entity within the mountain, and the mountain gets bigger, just like we hear about Govardhan and so forth, the Himalayas and so forth, Himavati, daughter of the Himalayas. So there are mountains that there's living entities within. The Vedas give us that picture, and during the life of Upadichara, it was in South India, there was a mountain range that was lusty in favor of trying to have union with a river. The river was female, the mountain was male, and so the river was feeling fearful. The river's name was Sukti Mati. Sukti Mati, personified, approached Upadichara and said, "Help, protect me." So Upadichara came, and with his foot he kicked the mountain, and the mountain receded. But there had already been... Could we turn that down, because you can see the screen better without it? Do you need it? You okay? Okay. The combination of the mountain and the river, two children were produced. The river, out of gratitude to the king, gave the two children to the king. One of the children became his commander, that was a male, became his commander-in-chief in his army. And the female, he accepted as his wife. And his wife's name was Girika. So he was very attracted to his wife, very attached to his wife. And one time they were in the royal garden together, and they both had lusty feelings for one another simultaneously, and were feeling a little overwhelmed at that lusty attraction for one another. But just at that moment, this is Mahabharata narration, some of the forefathers of Upadichara came and said, "Could you do some service for us? There's a particular ceremony for the worship of the forefathers that requires a deer, and can you please secure a deer for us so this sacrifice can become completed?" So in the middle of lusty feeling for Girika, he was obedient to the forefathers and went into the forest searching for a deer. And when he was in the forest searching for the deer, his mind wouldn't leave his beloved Girika. And he saw an eagle perched on a tree. This is Mahabharata. And he appealed to the eagle. "This is a very auspicious time to conceive a child. Please take my semen and carry it to my wife Girika." The eagle agreed. The eagle was carrying the semen of the king, Upadichara. Another eagle saw and thought it was some meat, and so they attacked in midair. The eagle was flying over the river Jamuna. The semen fell from his mouth and was swallowed by a fish. See, it's a Mahabharata story. And the fish was an apsara who was cursed to become a fish. And that apsara who was cursed to become a fish, her name was Adrika. She swallowed the semen of the king, and two children were born within her womb. When she, or conceived within her womb, they weren't born yet. And when she had conceived the child, the two, male and female, within her womb, she was released from her curse. A fisherman caught that fish, and when he opened the fish, much to his surprise, there was a male and a female child. The male and the female child were given to the king, Uparichara. And the king, in turn, accepted the son as a member of his family and gave the daughter to a fisherman to care for, because she was born from the body of a fish. Her body smelled like a fish. So she had a Matsya Gandha was her name. She smelled fishy. Didn't smell good. The father called her Satyavati. And he thought, my dear daughter, if you take the occupation of carrying persons across the river, one day it may happen. And so it did. One day it may happen that a great sage will be carried by you across the river, and he may give you some benediction. And that's what happened. Parashara was carried by a boat that Satyavati was carrying. Parashara, you know the story. Parashara did his astrological calculation, very auspicious time for an incarnation of the Supreme Lord to take birth just now. So he requested Satyavati, would you be willing to be the mother of an incarnation of the Supreme Lord? And I'll be the father? And she was, whoa. but we're not married. That's okay. This can be arranged in such a way you don't lose your virginity. I have mystic powers. Well, what's it going to be like if I'm walking around unmarried, pregnant for 9 months? He said, don't worry. The pregnancy will be consummated within moments, and the child will be born within moments in an adult form. Well, we're in the middle of the river, and we're on both sides of the river, and everyone's going to see what we're up to. And he said, don't worry. I have a mystic power. I can create an island that's invisible to everybody else. Dvipa, Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, was conceived on a dvipa, created by Parashara Muni. And so Satyavati trusted the integrity and the words of Parashara, so she became the father. She became the mother of Vyasadeva. That was her first child. Vyasadeva was the first child of Satyavati. So Parashara gave her two benedictions besides Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa as her son. One benediction is, your next son will become the emperor. And your fishy smell will now become fragrant. You'll smell celestial smell for miles. So now back to Santanu. When he saw Satyavati, she was very beautiful and she smelled very beautiful, and he wanted to have her as his wife. But that's the story behind Satyavati. Now, Brihat Bhagavatamrita, some of you have read it. Chapter 2 speaks of Uparicharavasu in this way. Uparicharavasu, there are three sections in Mahabharata that are, according to Jiva Goswami, especially Krishna conscious. One of them, of course, is Bhagavad Gita. There's many parts of Mahabharata that are intrigue and speaking on codes of Dharma and Adharma, but three sections are particularly very Krishna conscious. And Bhagavad Gita, of course, is one. Vishnu Sahasranam is another. And this Narayaniya section of Moksha Dharma is another. So in that part of Mahabharata, the Narayaniya section of Moksha Dharma, it mentions a sacrifice in which this king Uparicharavasu was engaged in, and the demigods, including Brihaspati, who attended, they were unable to see the Supreme Lord Vishnu receiving or extending his hands to accept the offerings, but Uparicharavasu could because of his unique devotion. That's what is explained there. So he was a very qualified person, this father of Satyavati. So there's the Parashara Muni image and Vyasadeva. So now we have this situation where Santanu, being attracted to Satyavati, goes to the father of Satyavati and requests his daughter in marriage. And the fisherman says no. Because my daughter will be giving birth to the next king, or to a king. And you already have a firstborn son who will become the king to follow you, so you can't marry my daughter. You know the Mahabharata narration. So Santanu was really sad, singing the blues, woo woo woo. Can't get my mind off of such a tea. So he went back to the kingdom, but he couldn't do his duties anymore. He was really down. And his son, Devavrata, inquired from the ministers, what happened to Dad? He's like so sad. And they explained what happened. So Devavrata went to the fisherman and made an appeal and said, please let my father marry your daughter. He said, no, for these reasons. Then Devavrata said, well, no problem. I'll take a vow right now. I won't become king. And the fisherman said, sorry, the answer is still no. How come? Because if you marry and your son is born first, then your son will become the king, so your father can't marry Satyavati because you're the firstborn son and your first son. So he said, okay, easy, I won't marry. I take a vow, I'll never marry. And the fisherman said, it's okay, it's a deal. Shake on it. Sign the contract. Your father can now marry Satyavati. So from that time, Devavrata became known as Bhishma Dev, one who takes a very strong vow. And he upheld that vow, even in great difficulty. The great difficulty was he had to fight, we'll hear some more about it tomorrow. No, Sunday. He had to fight Parashuram, his guru, Dhanurved guru, Parashuram. How'd you like to fight Parashuram? Because he wouldn't depart from his vow. So Satyavati then married Santanu. And Santanu and Satyavati had two sons. One of the sons' names was Chitrangada. He was the elder brother. Now this is straight from Srimad Bhagavatam. Chitrangada, of whom Vichitravirya was the younger brother, was killed by a Gandharva who was also named Chitrangada. You know the story. The Mahabharata story says there was a Gandharva named Chitrangada, and he heard, there's this fellow down there on the earth planet that says he's Chitrangada. He's an imposter. So he went and challenged him, and they had a big battle, and the Gandharva won. And Santanu's son lost, and he was killed. That was the end of Chitrangada. And then Vichitravirya, who was married to Ambika and Ambalika, the two daughters of Kashiraj, we're going to hear that narration Sunday. Vichitravirya married them both, but because he was too attached to these two wives, he had a heart attack and died of tuberculosis. Now, that's Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada's translation of Canto 9, Chapter 22. Mahabharata describes it a little differently, but that's what Srimad Bhagavatam says. So here's the family tree. There's Ganga. Santanu married both Satyavati and sons Vichitravirya and Chitrangada. Santanu married Ganga, and Bhishma was the main son. Devavrata later becoming Bhishma. And Santanu is in this Kuru line. Remember? It's in the line of the Kuru dynasty. The Yadu dynasty is over here. We can say some more things about the Yadu dynasty later. But, you know, Shurasena, Vasudeva, and Kunti, brother and sister. Did you know that Kunti had another sister? Shrutakirti. And Shrutakirti, Kunti and Vasudeva's sister, married one of the sons of Viprachara Vasu. That's not the right way to say his name. Uparichara Vasu. Uparichara Vasu had five sons. One of those five sons, because he conquered the Chedi kingdom, so one of those five sons married the sister of Kunti and Vasudeva, and that child born was Shishupal. So Shishupal was a relative, directly, family related. I mean, a little remotely, but family related. His, Shishupal's mother and Krishna's father were brother and sister. They're first cousins. But he had this problem with Krishna. There's this interesting story. When Shishupal was born, there were many persons that came. They were near contemporaries. Krishna was born a little bit before Shishupal. When Shishupal was born, many persons came to see the newborn child. You know how it is in Vedic culture. And somebody mentioned, oh, is Shishupal, this newborn son. By the way, Vasudeva and Devaki, they also had a newborn son. And his name was Krishna. Just hearing Krishna's name, he started to scream. You know, sometimes children cry. Sometimes they whimper. Sometimes they cry. Sometimes they scream. Sometimes they scream so loud you think the whole building is going to fall apart. It was one of those. He screamed. And he wouldn't stop. They went and got doctors. He wouldn't stop. They couldn't find out what was wrong with him. They got brahmanas to chant mantras. It wouldn't stop. It went on all day, all night. It went on for a month. Just Shishupal screaming. Just hearing Krishna's name. It was like in his genes, he really had it in for Krishna. Very profoundly. Terrible demon. Born in a royal family, but, you know, for a purpose, for Krishna's pastimes. So there's a little description of Grandfather Bhishma. Now, from the family tree, we also find that Bhishma becomes the, well, Chitrangada died early. Vichitravirya had these two wives, Ambika and Ambalika. When Vichitravirya died, Satyavati was in big anxiety. What's the big anxiety? Who's going to be the next king? Because Bhishma has taken a vow he'll never marry, and Vichitravirya is now gone, and Chitrangada is now gone. So what to do, what to do, what to do? And then there was some advice given to her in Vedic culture, which is no longer allowed in Kali Yuga. The brother may produce a child in the womb of the wife in the absence of the husband of the wife. If the wife is barren, the brother may produce the child. That's not allowed in Kali Yuga. But so that advice was given, and so Satyavati approached Ambika and Ambalika. I know that you're feeling great separation from your husband, Vichitravirya, but we have to maintain the royal order. And so there's this facility in Vedic culture. Would you please oblige? And they were most unwilling, but Satyavati was very persuasive and they agreed, because they were thinking that brother of Vichitravirya was Bhishma. And Satyavati appealed to Bhishma. Can you, will you? To carry on the lineage. And he said, Mom, I've taken a vow. And I don't break vows. But I have a suggestion. There's another brother. You didn't tell anybody, but you told me. Vyasadeva was born before I was born of you. So call Vyasadeva. So Vyasadeva, when Vyasadeva was born of Satyavati, he stood before her in full stature, because he wasn't like a little baby. He was, as was promised by Parashara, born in an adult feature, and said, you're my mother, and at any time at all that you have a need of service from me, just call my name, because he's Vishnu, just call my name and I'll be there at your service. So she did, she called him, and Vyasadeva came immediately, but he was in the midst of very severe austerities, and his body was unclean and didn't smell good, and he was like, just wait until after I finish my austerity. And she said, who knows what will happen? Vijayatravirya is gone, Chitrangada is gone, Santanu is gone. Please perform this service now. And he said it won't have good consequence. But she was in too much anxiety. Moms can sometimes not have their best intelligence working sometimes when they're really concerned with something that really needs to be done now. So being requested by his mother, these three sons were born, Pandu, Dhritarashtra, and Vidura, as you know, Ambika, Ambalika, and Ambika's maidservant. Three sons carrying on the lineage, Pandu, Dhritarashtra, and Vidura, fathered by Vyas. But the mother was Ambika and Ambalika and the maidservant, carrying on that line of the Kuru dynasty. So they then artificially, the sons of Dhritarashtra, called this the Pandava line and the Kuru line, the Kuru dynasty, the Pandava dynasty, and so forth. So on Sunday, we're going to spend some time on Srimad Bhagavatam, on the pastime that takes place where Bhishma Dev identifies how he can be killed in the Kurukshetra battle. It's a little blend of Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam that leads up to the Bhishma Dev lying in the bed of arrows and Bhishma Dev's pacifying Yudhisthira and the whole thing. I don't know if there's going to be... that's the presentation for the evening. You can turn that nice light on again now. I don't know if there's going to be any discussion or questions, because it's Friday night Mahabharata stories. You have some?
The Vashishtha that is mentioned here, is it the same Vashishtha from Ramayana?
Yeah. He's a Chiranjeeva. He lived for a long time. He goes back even further. We got all different ages here. Okay. Discussion? Yes.
You mentioned about Bhishma Dev.
Speak loud, because we have people way in the back.
You mentioned about Bhishma Dev taking the vow not to marry. My question is, in our spiritual life also, especially when it comes to my spiritual life, I take certain resolutions, not exactly vows, and try to be more determined on fulfilling those resolutions. I feel that I need to be more determined in order for me to exactly fulfill those. So how do I cultivate that determination part?
Could you hear the question back there? The two men in the back, you could hear? Should I repeat the question? Did they hear the question, or should I repeat the question? Okay. They don't speak English. No. Oh, they're just... Okay. Okay. How to increase determination so that when we make some determination to go further in our Krishna consciousness, we can go further in our Krishna consciousness with determination. There's two main things that I have heard on this topic. One of them comes from Srila Prabhupada in the topmost yoga system. The topmost yoga system is a series of lectures recorded in Los Angeles in the 60s, where different devotees are reading verse and purport from chapter 6. And when it comes to this topic, Dritta Vrata, great determination, Prabhupada explains, great determination or determination can become greater by observing principles of sense control. By principles of sense control and properly observing them, one's determination can become greater. And he gives the example of observing fasting days on the appearance days of Vishnu. You know, Vaishnava, standard Vaishnava tapa, or the Ekadasi Vrata. And by observing, you know, in a reasonable way, reasonable meaning that which you can do, and it's not something that's totally artificial, but you observe it, and it increases determination. It increases mental strength. By practice of sense control and offering that sense control to Vishnu in authorized and standard ways, one's determination and mental strength increases. Then another, it's found in Madhurya Kadambini, it's in relation to there are different stages of unsteady bhakti or anishtita bhakti. One of those stages of unsteadiness is not being able to uphold vows when it comes to things that I should do, and then there's things that I should not do. Yama and niyamas. And the principle is find some that you can do and do them consistently, and then consider what additional ones you can do and do them consistently, and so forth. Like you're sitting on the staircase, you don't try to go to the landing in one step. You go one step at a time. You're like a child walking up stairs. It takes a while to walk up a few stairs, but one step at a time, like that. So take, for you, or for us, any one of us, take increments of increase of sense control and standard and something that requires determination and see it through. Stay with it for some time. And then be ready and be prepared to go on to the next and on to the next. Go in steps. And that way, nishtha can be achieved, steadiness of mind. And you know the verse from Canto 1, Chapter 2, where the nishtha stage is described. You know the verse? Anybody here know the verse? Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati Nice to keep, nice to keep, nice to keep. That's the nishtha stage. In the nishtha stage, where steadiness comes from what's described above. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. And you know the meaning. The two kinds of bhagavatas is the book and the person, bhagavata. And by serving the book and the person, bhagavata, the abhadras become removed. And as abhadras become removed, one comes closer to the nishtha stage, from unsteady to steady. So there's three responses. Three, and it's not like you may do more than one. It's okay, but all three give some indication of how to strengthen determination and vow. Yes.
Can you please give some examples of following this question? You said take step by step and increase your vows of sense.
Sure. Let's take a codicil. We're all enjoined. Everybody. I mean, except for children. And no grains. No grains and beans. That's, you know, walking on the floor. Now I want to... So what's something that I can do, sustained over time, not, you know, quantum, but, you know, incremental, something that I can do every ekadasi. Reasonable to maintain it every ekadasi. And I can, so then I can, something I can do, and then, you know, I take resources that will help me do that something consistently. Whatever that might be. You know, a buddy system or accountability or you know, something. Having somebody pull my chain and say, you know, remember, tomorrow's ekadasi and you're going to have to, yeah, thanks for reminding me. So, you know, strength from the others that also have strength, and in not a matter of controlling, but a matter of supporting your Krishna bhakti. And then just do that for some time, and then it becomes your life, your lifestyle. And then something, and then something. You know, like everyone, starting chanting. We didn't start at some high number. Most people, some people, a little different, but, you know, little step by step. And then just don't go back. And then, so we can increase our chanting on the codicy, but, you know, where you can sustain it. And you meet it, and you follow through. Take some support, and you, so like that. Yes? Sure. Fantastic. Canto 1, Chapter 7. No, Canto 1, Chapter 5. In Canto 1, Chapter 5, there's this... Excuse me. It's Chapter 7. Right after the Atmarama verse is explained. You're familiar with the Atmarama verse. So, the sages say, Krishna Katha, that's it, Krishna Katha. Please give us some Krishna Katha. So what does Sutta Goswami do? He starts speaking about the Pandavas. And Prabhupada raises the question and answers the question written in the purport. You can read. Starts around like 1, 7, something like 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, in that range. They wanted Krishna Katha, and he started speaking about the Pandavas, what's going on. And then the answer is, because the Pandavas are totally connected to Krishna, speaking about the Pandavas is the same as speaking about Krishna, as part of Krishna Katha. It's of interest to Shukadeva Goswami because it's in relation to Krishna. And it's of interest to us because it's of interest to Shukadeva Goswami because it's in relation to Krishna. There's nothing separate from Krishna. It's all in relation to Krishna. Although it's dealing with something of this world. Mountains that roar. And so forth. I'm not surprised that there's not a lot of questions because it's like so many stories. But many times devotees say, not so much philosophy, please. Stories is much easier to listen to. You know what I mean? So this was story night. We'll do some more philosophy Sunday. And stories too. Thanks. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yes.